Welcome to the Women Shifting Gears podcast driven by Hemmings. This is your home for inspiring conversations with women leading the way throughout the automotive spaces. I'm your host, Amanda Busick, and the power of this podcast is in the strength of this community. We believe that high tides rise all ships, and to each of you collaborating together to steer this ship forward, we see you, we recognize you, and we salute you. It's time to set sail. Another episode of Women Shifting Gears starts now. Entering into her 10th season as a professional driver in the National Hot Rod Association, Brittany Force already owns a Top Fuel Championship, 11 career wins, 32 number one qualifiers, and 20 different current track records, in addition to holding the national elapsed time record and the national speed record at 338 miles per hour. Yes, you heard that right. And while her surname might be synonymous with drag racing, the SoCal native is blazing a path of her own as she builds a legacy in a sport that has been part of her life since birth. Balancing a life on and off the track, finding peace from a very scary crash that she has no memory of, and what the next 10 years might look like, Brittany Force shares a little bit of what life is like inside the helmet and beyond on the Women Shifting Gears podcast driven by Hemmings. Welcome to your Women Shifting Gears podcast driven by Hemmings. Our guest this week is none other than the 2017 Top Fuel champion, Brittany Force. And Brittany, as I was looking over your stats and preparing for this interview, I think what stuck out to me the most is this upcoming season is your 10th year in the professional ranks. Looking back at that decade, what word sticks out to you?
Really, it doesn't seem possible. 10 years, it went by much quicker than I thought. I mean, 10 years is that's a big number out there. And, you know, to be in the field competing and, you know, we won a championship in 2017 and we've done so much as a team to see how far we've come. I've learned a lot since day one in 2013, when I debuted in Pomona, to where I'm at right now. But really, it's just, I'm very proud of, you know, how far we've come and how much I've learned and how we've grown as a team, and adding a Top Fuel car to John Force Racing, a funny car camp. And it's just, you know, looking over at all the years, all the people I've worked with, I'm very proud.
When you look at those 10 years, do you see different phases within them?
Absolutely. When I look back just going back to my opening season, 2013, I feel like I've come such a long way as a driver, not just as a driver in the sport, in the seat, but in everything I do, in interviews I do, in media events I do. I feel like I've really grown. It takes experience. It takes time and putting the hard work in. And I feel like I've come a long way. I go back to 2013 and I think, holy cow, I didn't even know what I was doing. So I feel like I've grown a lot as a driver and just a face in the sport.
Well, as we dive into your career, I want to introduce you to the audience a little more. Brittany Force is the daughter of John Force. He is the legendary drag racer of the NHRA. He's a 16-time champion and the winningest drag racer of all time. So, Brittany, when you look back at your beginning, was there any other choice for you, or was drag racing going to be the landing spot?
I always knew I'd be involved in drag racing one way or another. I grew up in the sport. I have pictures with my sisters, in car seats and strollers with pacifiers in our mouths out at the racetrack. So racetracks were always home for my family. That's where we'd go to see dad and his crew guys, and his crew guys and crew chiefs were big brothers to all of us. So for us, it was family out there, and these racetracks became homes to us. And we grew up in the sport. So I always loved the sport. I knew I would be involved somehow. Originally, I went to school to be a school teacher. I have my secondary education teaching credential. And at the time, I was competing in A-field dragster. And that was kind of my plan. Was I thought maybe I could bounce back and forth. I mean, I wouldn't be able to compete full time on a circuit, but I thought as a teacher, I'd have my summers off and, you know, I could go do that. And then in 2012, an opportunity came along to jump into a Top Fuel car and make some passes. And we were working with Ford at the time. And it was kind of just an opportunity that opened up, and I signed up for it. I jumped in and I fell in love with the car. I spent the season testing in that Top Fuel car. And it wasn't until I made my first full pass down the racetrack in Las Vegas that I knew the direction I originally thought I was going was not going to be it for me anymore. And I fell in love with the sport, not from a from the stands as a fan, but now as a driver. And I knew in that moment, this is the career, this is what I want to do. And I knew I wasn't going back, wasn't turning back.
These top fuel cars can travel top speeds of 330 plus miles per hour, something that you see quite frequently. What does the speed do to you?
You can't really compare it to anything. There's nothing like it. Honestly, it completely takes your breath away. When you step on that throttle pedal and you launch and then you excel all the way down the racetrack to where you shut the car off and throw the chutes, you can't compare it to anything. It's like getting the wind knocked out of you. It's like getting kicked in the chest and completely losing your breath. You can't prepare for it. You got to hang on tight and be ready for it. It's 11,000 horsepower. We're doing like 5 to 6 G's on the run and negative G's when we hit the chute. So it's a lot on your body. It's intense. It takes a while to get used to. My first season, I came out in 2013, just from the belts and making passes, you know, back to back testing before our season started, I was covered in bruises and broken blood vessels on my neck and my shoulders. And it was just, my body wasn't used to those types of speed and, you know, that much on your body, that much force on your body. So it does take time. You do get used to it, but always every beginning of the season, I'll have, you know, little bruises and marks on my shoulders and my neck, just because I've been out of the seat for a few months, not used to it. But once we get back in the roll of things, it's like, okay, now we're ready to go. We're ready to go compete.
I will say nothing about that sounds pleasant, Brittany, but there is something that is, and this is completely from a fan aspect, my position, but there is something that's so raw and addicting to drag racing. Can you put your finger on it?
It's everything that comes with drag racing. You get immediate results. It's less than 4 seconds. For me, it's the all the senses that it hits. It's the sound, it's the smells, it burns your eyes, it burns your nose, the ground shakes, and there's absolutely nothing like it. To stand on the starting line, to even be in the stands, and the whole grandstands are just shaking from these cars launching 330 miles per hour in less than 4 seconds. There's nothing like it. I mean, your ears are ringing. It's just, it hits every single sense, and there's nothing like it.
Want to go back to your childhood a little bit. As we mentioned, your dad was a very prominent figure in drag racing, effectively a hero to many people across the country. When did you know that your childhood was different?
I guess it was, I mean, for my sisters and I, it was pretty normal. We talked to our friends about what do your parents do? What does your dad do? And they all thought it was crazy, but for us, it was very normal. It was a lifestyle we grew up with, and we turned the TV on, and he'd be on TV half the time. He'd be on fire or something crazy, but we got used to it as kids. But I think it was more when we go out to dinner as a kid, and fans would come up to us at dinner. I remember we'd go to Coco's Bakery. It was one of our top places we always ate at, and fans would come up and ask for autographs. So that's where it kind of stood out to me, that who he was, how big he was in the sport. And to me, he was just dad.
You mentioned that you're the lone top fuel car and a staple of funny cars. That is what John Force Racing is known for. When you told your dad that you wanted to try out the other nitro breathing car, what was the discussion like?
Well, that was a while ago. Really, it was, I mean, he pushed funny car. We're a funny car family. We're a funny car team. That's all John Force Racing has ever known. But I drove Super Comp and A-Fuel for about 6 years. So for me, I was kind of, like I said earlier, I was good with sticking with A-Fuel. That's what I liked. That's what I knew. To me, 260 miles per hour, that was fast enough. I didn't need to go faster than that. So really, it was actually my dad that kind of brought up the idea. Well, what about getting to a top fuel car, a funny car, going up into, you know, the professional ranks? And again, I was still planning on, you know, being a school teacher and just more hobby racing. So for me, I wasn't interested in that. And then when we had that opportunity open up about just testing in a car, that's where I jumped in. And sure, I'll be your test pilot. I'll jump in and, you know, we'll make runs and see where it goes. I never thought it would lead me to where I am now.
At this point, your sister, Ashley Force, Courtney, already racing professionally, being able to bounce ideas and this career along with them, how much did that support you in the early years?
Having my sisters is, I mean, family, they're just the biggest support system. But the crazy thing is, my team is also my biggest support system. We are on the road I mean, weekend after weekend, we do dinners together. We work out together. We travel together. I mean, we are a team. We're together all the time. So they're also my biggest support system. But it is nice having family out there, having my dad to talk to, you know, after a long, hard day where you get beat up and it's like, I could go to him, sit down and have a conversation. And he knows because he's felt it all. He's done it all. He's done everything in the sport and things that I'm now experiencing, you know, struggles or, you know, trying to improve in areas or whatever it is, I could go to him because he's been in the sport the longest and he's felt everything.
What do you think makes a good drag racer?
What do I think makes a good drag racer? Someone that's willing to put in the time, the effort, and has the heart. Really, it's the heart. You got to love it. And if you're out there doing it just to do it because it's a job, I mean, for the sake of it is a dangerous sport. Things can go wrong. You can get hurt. That's not the reason to do it. You have to be passionate about it. And that's something my dad has taught me. The passion, the love for it. I mean, even on the tough days, you still got to find a way to love it. And it is a struggle because there's days where you get beat up and I just want to go home and cry. It's tough when you get, you know, whipped every single weekend. And it's tough when, you know, it's the driver's error. Sometimes it's crew chiefs. A lot of the time it's driver. Sometimes it's crew guy. And it's tough to carry that weight as an individual, no matter who it is. So I think it's the heart. It's the passion and, you know, just the determination to fight through it. Fight through the bad days. Love the great days. That's easy. But really, I think it's the tough days. Fighting through those days and just staying determined, staying focused and having the heart.
What's something that pulls you out of those tough days?
My team, definitely my team. They always have my back. It's something as simple as a pat on the back and don't worry, we go to another one in just a few days. And just the comments that they make, you know, the conversations we have, I sit down with my crew chiefs on those tough days and, you know, we got your back and, you know, we'll learn from this. We'll find a way to learn from this, put it behind us and move forward. And the unfortunate thing is it's going to happen again. And that's the tough part, but finding a way to learn from it and put it behind you.
I want to go to your fifth season of your career. That would be 2017. What a remarkable year for you. But it kicked off with your first win of your career. That was 2016, actually. Mm-hmm. So let's go 2016. Your first win, Gainesville, Florida. Walk us through the weekend.
Gator Nationals. It's a weekend I'll never forget. I knew we were coming up on that first win. I'd been racing since 2013, and we hadn't gotten to the winner's circle yet. So we were all just, we were ready to be there. It's when you're out there weekend after weekend. I remember in the beginning in, you know, just my rookie season, it was, you know, you get past first round and it was like, okay, you get past second round. And I was still pumped about it. Like I'd leave and I'm like, we got to second round. That's exciting. And then after a few weekends of it, a few months of it, it's like, well, that sucks. I want to keep going further. Like the second rounds aren't so great anymore. And then you'd get to the semifinals and that was exciting. But then after you do it time after time, you want more. And I will never forget it was Gator Nationals was my first win. And that's a huge event. I grew up at that racetrack as a kid. That was one that we always went to was the Gator Nationals in Gainesville, Florida. My family always went there and it just, there's so much built around that race. It's just it's a big one. It's a special one. And like I said, in races previous, we'd gotten close, but couldn't close the deal. And we pulled it off in Gainesville. I remember standing in the winner's circle with my crew chiefs and my team. And it was a first win for a majority of us, a lot of those guys. And I remember just looking at them all and it was like, wow, I can't believe we're here. This is so awesome. But then it's the addiction that comes in because now you want more. You want to go do it the next weekend.
Well, the next season, you would go on to win the championship at the last race of the season in your home track of Pomona. From that year, as you come into your own, when did you know that this championship might be possible for yourself?
It was in the countdown. We had an amazing countdown in 2017, and we struggled beginning of the year. And the countdown, if you could hang in there, hang in that top 10, get into that countdown, you get a clean slate. You kind of get a start over, your points reset, and it's anybody's game at that point. And we had a very strong countdown. We won a handful of the races or were runner up. And it was, we just kept climbing. I want to say we were in sixth position going into the countdown and made that jump all the way up to number one. So, I mean, we had a lot of miles right there, you know, to overcome and to move up to the number one spot. I mean, it came down to Vegas. It came down to Pomona. And it was those final races, once we'd made that big move, that I knew, okay, we have a shot here. We definitely have a shot here. It's going to be tough. It's not going to be easy, especially because we were the one chasing. We were always still behind that number one car, Steve Torrence. So we were constantly chasing him. We never got around him. I want to say we had a chance in Las Vegas. So that was the second to the last race of the season. Final round, I red lit. And there is nothing tougher to pack up and put behind you than a red light. And we had the car, we should have won, and we red lit. And to carry that over into Pomona, because now it's the final race of the season, we still have a shot. And the last time I was in a car, I cost us the win. I cost us moving up in the points. And to carry that with you, man, it took a lot to find a way to pack that up, put it behind me. And like I said earlier, use it as motivation, use it to learn from. And that's what I did. I found a way to put that behind me, learn from it, and find a way to come out fighting on the other end. And we did. We battled it out in Pomona. It was one of our greatest races of the season. We were number one qualifier. We won the race and we won the championship.
Did you question your mental toughness heading into Pomona?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so much weight on your shoulders, not just me as a driver, but crew chiefs as well, crew guys as well, because it's you bring your car up to the starting line and it's over in 4 seconds. So everything you bring up there, it's sitting on the starting line and it's going to go down one way or the other. And it's over in less than 4 seconds. And once we're up there, the crew guys, their job's done. Crew chief, their job's done. Now it's all on me. So it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot you carry on to, not just for the sake of, obviously, I want to do well, but there's obviously my team. There's John First Racing. There's my father who, you know, introduced me to the sport, and then sponsors. So there's, you know, weight from all different directions. And it is tough to find a way to balance that, use it as motivation, but not let it pull you out of your focus.
I have a very vivid memory of you at the top, and you're wearing the white hat. You have the mellow yellow jacket that is too big for you on. You're trying to raise the trophy. It's very heavy for your stature. The rush of emotion in that moment, what is that like for a champion?
Oh, it's something I'll never forget. I relive it all the time in my head. It's something I have photos framed in my office. It's something I will never forget. It's just this moment of how far we've come and how proud I was in that moment. We pulled it off and it was a team effort. It took every single one of my guys for us to get there. It took my sponsors, Monster Energy. It took all of us to get there. And it was just, it's something so proud of. And it's just the greatest feeling ever to stand there and celebrating, you know, your season, all the hard work that went into it. And now you finally get to enjoy it. There's nothing like it. I'll never forget, you know, that moment.
What's the greatest compliment you received after winning that championship?
Greatest compliment. Good driving. There's nothing better than that. You were a great driver. I had people tell me, you know, to be able to come out of that Las Vegas red light and to find a way to turn it around and stay focused and not let that distract me. That was impressive. So anytime anyone, whether it's a fan or a sponsor or my dad, anyone's pointing out, you know, you did a good day, you were a good driver, you were great behind the wheel. There's no better compliment than that.
Being a child of an athlete, and growing up in a household that had a lot of attention on it, just sheer from the sheer success of your father. As an adult now, do you have a hard time trusting people?
No, I don't think so. I'm a pretty good, I feel like I could read character pretty well. I mean, maybe not all the time, but I've always kind of felt that. I have that sense when you meet somebody, you know, I guess I could read them pretty well. But no, I don't. I've always been pretty open. I give people a shot before I assume. And I always give people the benefit of the doubt. So I don't think I have a hard time trusting people.
Well, there's no secret that this lifestyle takes a lot of time. You're on the road, gosh, probably 200 days a year. How do you make time for a personal life?
It is tough. It is tough to make time for personal life when you're on the road. I mean, we race between 22, 24 events a season. And then we do sponsor events on off weekends. We do match races in between. So we don't have much time. And it's finding a way when you are home to balance it and make time for personal life. For me, it's going out for dinner and a glass of wine with my girlfriends. Family, they're already on the road with me. So I see my family a ton. Balancing workouts on the road. I love being home because I have my routine and where my workouts are, but not home a lot. So just finding a way to, it's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle you have to adapt to. But again, I've kind of grew up that way. So I'm very used to it.
Part of the development of you as a driver after winning the championship in 2017 at Pomona in 2018, you would go on to have a horrific crash. I can, on my own perspective, remember time kind of stopping. Can you walk us through that moment for you, for an audience that may not be familiar?
Yeah, so it was 2017. We locked up the championship. We left Pomona with the number one on our car. And our next season starts. We kick off the season in Pomona. So I'm back again at that same track where I just won on that racetrack. And it's pretty surreal when you look back on it all. It was Pomona 2018, round one. I was in the right lane and it was, we want the win. We want to get down there. And it was almost instantly like tire smoke, you know, right off the line. And I went in and pedaled it and the car wasn't completely straight and stepped on the gas and it wasn't straight. And kind of at that point, it was already going towards the wall, and to recover when you're already going that fast is very tough to do. It's kind of at that point, you're just hanging on for dear life and you're waiting for the car to stop. So I crossed the center line. Luckily, there was no one there in the lane next to me where I crossed over and hit one wall, hit the other, came back across, hit the other wall and turned the car, you know, sideways. And luckily I don't remember it. I have no memory of it. I barely even have memory of that morning because that morning we did a ceremony on stage where I was given my championship ring and my team celebrated and sponsors were there. Monster was there to, you know, congratulate on our new season, putting the number one sticker on my car. It was a big event. And it's like, I don't even remember most of it. I look back on the pictures and I don't remember most of that morning. Don't remember staging the car. Don't remember anything. But, you know, looking back, I want to learn from it was my biggest thing. So, you know, once I got out of the hospital and got back with my crew chiefs, it was analyzing the run. I mean, from start to finish. Okay, what did I do wrong? How do I fix this next time? And it's just a driver in the seat wanting to win, not as much as experience as most drivers out there. And I've never been in that position before. I've pedaled it before, but that was pretty quick on a pedal job. It was also race day. You want to win. And I stepped on it too quick, wasn't straight, and couldn't recover in time.
How hard is that to break down? I mean, listening to you say that, just the braveness of wanting to even reflect on it, how hard is that to rewatch tape, to analyze that knowing you're inside of that cockpit?
Looking back on the footage, I can't believe that I was in that car. And it's really frustrating that I can't remember it. I look at this car and it's all over the place in the wall and sideways. And I mean, this thing was just a mangled mess. And to look at the run over and over, I kept thinking at some point the memory is going to pop back in my head. I'm going to remember it and go, okay, I know this is what and there's no memory of it. And that's the most frustrating part is that I have to analyze it from just watching it as if I were not in the car, even though I was there. So that is a tough thing to have to analyze it that way. But it taught me, you know, coming back from it and just 2 weeks later, I competed out in Phoenix. It taught me how mentally tough I am. I didn't know how tough I was until that moment. And I compare it to that championship run in 2017, where I knew if we win this run, we will be crowned the champion. I compare it to that. And it's still, I think, mentally was tougher than that to be able to know that wreck that I was in, body still banged up, sore, bruised, still hurting, and to be able to climb back in a car that I knew what we'd just done 2 weeks later and step on the gas pedal again. It was mentally tough to do that. But we had a plan going into the whole thing. We didn't even know if we were going to race out in Phoenix. It was just 2 weeks later. I was out of the hospital. I felt pretty good. went out to Phoenix. And for me, I climbed in the car and I needed to sit in it. I needed to sit in the car and be like, okay, this is the car I've been in a million times. And if you look at over my career, the fact that I've only had one mishap is pretty good. You know what's out there. You know the danger that comes with the sport. It's a part of it. And you know, eventually it's going to get you. I remember always thinking that eventually it's going to bite you. It's just, it comes with the territory, you know, wrecking in these cars. And it got me in Pomona. And, you know, going out to Phoenix and getting back in that car and sitting there talking to my crew chiefs, talking with my team, having them belt me in. And it was like, okay, you can't look at the one bad thing in your career. You can't focus on that. You got to look at all the great things. And it was, I wanted to get back in that car so quickly was the thing. I knew if I waited too long, I thought it would be harder for me to get back in the seat and step on the gas. So it was, once I got in there, once I got in that seat, it was, okay, we're going out this weekend and we're going to compete. It might be a mess. I don't know how it's going to go. I might sit on the starting line and not step on the gas for 5 seconds, but I'm getting in the car and I'm doing this.
Visually, prior to that race, your camp had shared a photo of bruises. I think you were holding your cat and you just had bruises down your arm. Have you ever considered just the courage that takes, what you were able to accomplish of getting back in that car?
Yeah, I look back on it and it's a moment I'm very proud of. You know, the easy way would have just been to say, I wrapped my career here, I'm done, I won a championship, and, you know, I really could have hurt myself, so why chance it again? But for me, I've learned mostly from watching my dad. I've learned a lot about mental toughness, and I've learned a lot about overcoming tough situations. My dad wrecked in 2007 and he was in the hospital for months with broken arms and legs. And I remember him sitting in the hospital making notes on a paper that made absolutely no sense, talking about the next race that he was going to be at and already making plans with his team and his crew chief to get his spare car out. And it was just watching him overcome it because, again, the passion was there, the heart. He wasn't focusing on the one mishap in his career. He was looking at all the great moments, all the great memories, and how much he loves that sport because of that. And again, it comes with the territory crashing, but you can't focus on the one bad thing. And I learned that from my dad back in 2007. You know, watching him overcome such a struggle. I remember, you know, after he got out of the hospital and we brought him home, it was, he was learning to walk again on a walker. And watching him overcome that and get back in his car to do what he loved was probably the biggest lesson I've ever learned in life. If you really want something bad enough and you love it, you will fight for it.
Are you at peace with the crash?
I think so. Absolutely. I mean, I look back on it and I'm frustrated for the mistakes I made, but I see everything as a way to, you learn. You learn from everything. You learn from your mistakes. It's unfortunate, but my biggest lessons learned are from my biggest mistakes. And that's the only way to learn from them.
I imagine the Wally that you got at the Gator Nationals, your first Wally, was pretty important. I would also imagine the Wally that you would win the same day that you won your championship. But how important was the Wally that you would win after your crash?
That was a big one. And it was, it's funny because when I look back on when I stood down at that, you know, the end of that drag strip and that Wally was handed to me, this whole wave of emotion came over me. And I didn't even, it came out of nowhere because going into it, it was kind of, I had wrecked and it was already way behind us. We'd only gone a few races since then. And I was back to doing what I loved. And it wasn't the focus of that wreck and those images and, you know, the bruises on my, all that was finally behind me. And it was back to doing what I love and doing my job and being with my team. And it was when I stood down there and we won that race, I want to say it was just a handful of races, you know, after we wrecked and they handed me that Wally at the top end. My team was coming around and it was just this wave of emotion. And I wanted to burst into tears and it's still something I don't fully understand. I don't know where it came from, but I know it's looking back on that wreck and really overcoming it. Putting it behind me, finding a way to mentally pull myself up and get back in the car and put that horrific image out of my head and get back to doing what I love and finding what I love again. And it was not easy. It was one of the toughest battles I've ever dealt with in my life, but I found a way to do it and we landed ourselves in the winner's circle.
Very impressive.
Thank you.
I spoke with Steve Torrence prior to this interview, and as you guys have battled in these last couple of seasons, he wanted me to pass on a little note to you, and he said that the competition that you guys have had between each other has truly been a blast. Brittany is one of the nicest people you could ever meet, but don't let her quiet demeanor fool you. Mm-hmm. She is a fierce competitor, and as the years go by, the tension on the track builds, and as does our friendship off track. When you look at this network of people that you battle against each weekend, how do the competitors, how do them on track and off track, how do they make you better as a driver?
They make you, the competition out there, they make you really find ways to push yourself mentally, and push yourself past points you didn't know you'd ever be at or could get past. And also, I want to, you know, after you made that remark that Steve Torrence made, I have to say thank you. That's so awesome to hear him say that. And he is one of the baddest guys in the business. He's been number one for a handful of years, and he's the guy everyone wants to beat out there. And we do have a great relationship off track. We have our moments for sure. We have our up and downs, and we've had our moments on, typically, you know, at the racetrack after a run. We've had our moments, but we put it behind us. And again, it's just, it's in competition. Everybody wants to win. And when you climb out of that car, sometimes things fly out of your mouth that you don't mean to say, but it's in the heat of battle. You want to win. So we've all been there. We all get it. And I love Steve Torrence. He's a great guy. I've known him forever. And I love racing against him. He's, like I said, he's the baddest guy in the business right now.
He said you're a fierce competitor. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. I have my moments where, no, I could definitely do better, but I do the best I can every single weekend. There's never a weekend where I half-ass something or I'm not putting everything in. And it doesn't always show all the time. I get out there and you just have weekends where it's not your weekend. And sometimes it's back-to-back and it's tough. But I think it's finding a way to fight back and get back on top that really proves your character. So yes, that is an incredible compliment. So thank you to Steve for that.
2022 is probably going to be one of the toughest classes in Top Fuel that we've seen in several years. When you look at the parity that is stacking up within that category, how do you approach a season knowing that there's going to be traps everywhere and every weekend?
I'm ready for the season to start. We were talking about personal life at home. I've been home too long and now I'm getting bored. Like, I'm ready to get back to work and get back to being at a racetrack and with my team and doing what I love. That's really what I'm ready for. And it's this season, this is probably going to be one of the toughest ones in the Top Fuel field for sure. Looking at the way things are lining up and all the, you know, swaps that are being made with crew chiefs and teams and drivers, it's going to be competitive, but it's going to be a good season and I'm ready to get going.
Well, when you look at your off season, I would talk to Dave Grugmet back in December. Everything's staying pretty consistent with your team. How does that help going into a season that's going to be such high on competition?
It definitely helps when you return, come back into a new season and you have the same group around you. It is tough because I've had teams, you know, make big moves and pulled for me and a whole new group come in and you walk into the shop and your car's sitting there and there's 10 guys and I don't know any of them. And it's tough because you have to build this relationship with this team because they're the guys that are working on your car and your safety's in their hands. And so to be able to be with this team that I've been with since 2019, when we came on as Advanced Auto Parts, I've been with them for a while. They're an incredible group of guys. David Grubnick, Max Savage, they are just one of the greatest teams I've ever worked with. And I'm excited to be returning with, you know, it's pretty much the exact same team we're returning with. And it just gives you confidence as a driver, knowing that we've been there before, we've, you know, handled the bad days and we've been there on the good days together. It's just such a team effort. And to know I'm returning with them makes me proud.
You were the number one qualifier, I think, at over half the races last season. You set track records, whether it be speed or elapsed time, pretty commonly. Your competitors know what you are capable of, instilling a little bit of that fear in them. Does that give you an edge?
I think so. I mean, when we go out on Friday night qualifying and, you know, we set records, track records, and we grab that number one spot that we hang on to all weekend long, I think it shows other teams what we're capable of and just how tough we are, what we can do on the racetrack. But really, we got to find our edge on race day. That's where we struggled. We do really good during qualifying. We grab all those number one qualifying positions, but we'd struggle a little bit on race day. So that's where we got to turn a corner. Conditions are, it's always different on race day. It's a whole new ball game, and that's where our focus is going to be going into this season.
We talk amongst, you know, everyone talks about the finals and all the emotion leading up to the finals, but 10 a.m. or 11 a.m., depending on where we're at in the country on a Sunday, round one, to me, that is the most exciting part of the day. Talk about the anxiety leading up to the first round of competition.
I'll tell you, first round is tougher than a final round. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it'll ever change. And my biggest question when I first came out in Top Fuel in 2013, I remember my biggest question I asked a ton of different drivers, Morgan Lucas, Jack Beckman, Tony Schumacher, a ton of them. Do those nerves ever go away? Because I hate the nerves. That's the one thing. Do they go away, you know, after years of experience? Every single one of them said, nope. They'll be there forever. And I'm like, crap, that's the one thing that you just hate on race day when you pull, especially on race day, round one. I mean, just the nerves, you feel like you need to put your head in the toilet because you're going to puke. You're so sick to your stomach. You're excited. You're motivated. You're pumped. You have the vision of how you want the day to go in your head. And there's just so much, you know, rushing through your head and your mind and your body. And it's finding a way to take a deep breath and calm down a little bit and focus on doing your job. It is a lot. There's adrenaline pumping through you and it's just nerves, your heart's pounding, and it's just this rush that you can't get rid of. It's great to have it because I think it keeps you aware of that it is a dangerous sport and things can go wrong. So you can't be out there, you know, driving over the edge. You got to still take precaution and pull your foot out if you have to and, you know, risk losing the run. But they're always going to be there. And as much as I wish the nerves could go away, I think they're a good thing. But like I said, first round, for whatever reason, is tougher than a final round. Because once the final round's there, you're going. You've gone a few rounds, you're going, you're in the game, and you're just focused on that. First round, you had all night to think about it. Who you're running, what lane you're going to be in, what are conditions going to be like, just everything. You're just sitting on it, thinking about it. And then you're finally there. So first round will always be toughest.
What does 2022 look like for Brittany Force?
I'm excited. We're returning with the same team. We're returning with the same sponsors, Monster Energy and Flavor Pack, which is just incredible to have a relationship with these sponsors over the past few years and to return with them. And we'll have a number two on our car. So I'm excited. I'm proud of that. And we're going to be chasing down a number one spot again. That's the reason we're out there. That's what we love to do. And we're looking for a championship.
Well, this is going to be the hot lap with Brittany Force. And Brittany, let's say you're going on a road trip. Where are you headed?
I'd say Nashville, Tennessee.
What are you driving?
Chevy Silverado.
Okay, you're in the left seat of the Chevy Silverado. Who's your passenger?
My boyfriend, Bobby.
What's on the radio?
What's on the radio? Just top hits, that kind of stuff. Top hits, or I like all that house electronic. I don't even know what it's called. House music, I guess.
What's your favorite road snack?
Cheez-Its.
Well, I want you to, as you reflect on the last 10 years of your career and you move into a new decade, what are some of those bucket list items that you're looking to achieve in the next 10?
Bucket list items. I want to win more races. There's a handful of tracks I want to win at just because they are my favorite track. And I want another championship. That's number one on my list. We did it in 2017. There's nothing better than being able to do that with your team. And that's definitely number one on my list. Another championship. I also want to travel more. It's hard to do that because we already travel so much, but I want to travel out of the country. Yeah, those are probably my two big ones, traveling and another championship.
If you could go back and have a conversation with yourself after the crash in Pomona in 2018, what would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself that if you put your mind to it, you'll get through it, which I know my personality, I know how I'm built, I know how I'm wired, and how I've grown up watching my parents. I knew I'd get through it. I knew I'd be fine. It's just relieving that anxiety that you carry, finding a way to breathe through that, put it behind you, and come out on top.
She's Brittany Force. She's the 2017 Top Fuel champion, looking to add more to her record. This is your Women Shifting Gears podcast, driven by Hemmings.
Thank you for listening to the Women Shifting Gears podcast driven by Hemmings. Hemmings, your marketplace for the car collector enthusiast since 1954. This podcast is produced by GS Events.